the old world synagogues, when it came time to count for a minion, the shamus would say, not one, not two, not three. There's a very primitive fear of being numbered and singled out, even if the purpose is a religious one. The person singled out fears that the evil spirits will notice. Historically, individuals, private citizens, have always resisted census taking, and government have always sought census figures. The term census is of Latin origin. It comes from the Roman practice, Rome was famous for her centralized administration, of registering adult males and personal property for the purposes of taxation, military conscription, and the determination of the individual's political status. The government gained by knowing, the individual gained by the government's not knowing. New paragraph. Interestingly, the Bible tends to take the side of the individual against central planning. Because census taking was so often a policy of royal authority and tyranny. We know David as the young hero who slew the giant Goliath. We know him as the military leader who was also a sensitive poet. We think of him as the great leader of and founder of Jerusalem. But it's well to remember that David was also a crafty and calculating king, the first man to establish effective authority over the tribes. He did so by conquering Jerusalem, making it its own city, using its tolls to build up his own mercenary army, by bringing to Jerusalem not only the royal palace, but the royal shrine, which he turned into a central national sanctuary. In order to further enhance his ability to govern, towards the end of his life, David ordered a census of the tribes. This was carried out against some conservative opposition led by one of his generals, Joab. But it was carried out because the king demanded it. The census took 9 months to complete. And interestingly, almost immediately after the census had been taken, a terrible plague devastated the community. And it became a popular idea that the plague had been sent by God as punishment for David's actions. The story of the census and of the plague is told twice in Scripture. In both places, it is clear that, quote, God was displeased with this thing, end of quote. And in the second and later version, the priestly version in the book of Chronicles, it is even suggested that the act of taking the census had been suggested by Satan himself. Period. New paragraph. What I'm saying is simply that the taking of a survey or the taking of a census is never a neutral act. I'm always amazed at the willingness of people to offer up information willingly to anyone who sticks a survey document or a microphone and tape recorder in front of them. You'll tell them what they should sell you. You'll tell a candidate what he should tell you. Those who pay for a survey are always interested in knowing something about you for their benefit. Though obviously there's no point in stumbling around in the dark. And a highly intricate and complex society such as our own, central planning to a certain degree must take place. I confess that my tendency is always for less rather than for more. It's only in that way that some measure of freedom is maintained. And our judgment over surveys and over any census document will ultimately depend on our judgment of the institution which it authorizes it and pays for it, and of the purposes to which it is being put. Period. New paragraph. The beginning of this decade, last year, Jewish Community Federation undertook a census hyphen survey of our Cleveland Jewish community. Its purposes were, of course, to help us help plan for the needs of the community during the decade. Because we generally approve of the purposes and services of the Federation, I and others approve of the purposes of the survey document. And I'm grateful to those who have prepared the figures for releasing to me a number of their preliminary findings before they have been fully drawn together and presented in a complete form. I believe it important that any number of men and women who have the best interests of this community at heart confront these figures, bring to bear on them their own understanding of our structure and of our needs and of our future, and air these publicly so that the document will not become simply the planning vehicle for a small group within the community, but a truly useful vehicle whose information will be used to the maximum benefit of all. The most important figure in this survey is the bottom line. It is the figure that represents the sum total of the number of Jews in our city a year ago, the beginning of this decade. According to the figures which have been released, there were 70,095 Jews in the Cleveland area, I'm not sure its exact boundaries, in 1980. There are some census figures attached indicating the number of Jews in the same area in 1970, and that number was 83,500. There has been a drop then of some 13,500 people, but in the last decade, a drop of about 17%. And this drop has not been limited to the decade. Though the figures are not that certain, it seems clear that in the years immediately after the war, there were somewhere between 90 and 95,000 Jews in this city. New paragraph. We've lived in a world where the phrase population explosion has become commonplace, and we accept growth as a fact of life. But perhaps a more adequate description for the Cleveland Jewish community would be population implosion, a bursting within. If we were to extrapolate the same 17% drop over the next 10 years, we will find over the decade, there will be in Cleveland in 1990 something less than 59,000 of us. Now, Cleveland may be a plum, and there are some who believe that that we've turned the corner. And certainly, in many ways, our city is far healthier than it was 2 or 3 years ago. But every major econometric study that I've read suggests, at least over the next decade, and probably until nearly the turn of the century, the Northeast and the near Midwest and the upper Midwest in the United States will suffer a population decline because its economy will not keep up with the economy of the rest of the nation. Which suggests to me that barring some unexpected inflow of population, our numbers will drop, though perhaps not at the same 17% rate that they dropped during the last decade. New paragraph. This conclusion seems to be buttressed by the numbers in the survey relative to the children in our community. There were in 1980 6,600 children between 12 and 17, 5,200 children between 6 and 11, and 3,900 children between birth and the year and 5 years of age. This comes to a total of 15,500 children. Now, if you project the rate of decline indicated by these figures, you'll find that there'll be something less than 9,000 children in the city of Cleveland in 1990. In other words, there will be no natural in-migration, no natural increase in numbers. Our community will continue to age and to grow smaller. Period. New paragraph. I've done a little numbering of my own, and I've discovered that there are something over 300 classroom spaces in Jewish institutions in Cleveland. If we withdraw from the total number of classrooms, those classrooms required by the students in our day schools, we assume that no new classrooms will be built between now and 1990, we come to this conclusion. There will be one classroom for every 9 children who are in religious school, hyphen, not all children of religious school age are enrolled, hyphen, and each classroom will be used for between 2 and 8 hours a week. In other words, for 6 out of the 7 days of the week, almost the entire body of classrooms in the city of Cleveland, which are maintained by our institutions, will be empty. We have a community which has built up institutions for a population of 90,000, which now must care for and maintain these institutions for a community of less than 60,000. New paragraph. This suggests at the very least that the era of the edifice complex must be put behind us. That we must learn as a community to provide for services rather than structures. We must give so that institutions can operate rather than so that we can have a plaque on the wall of a new hall or of a new room. This has serious implications. These numbers carry serious implications for the synagogue. As you crisscross America, as I do from time to time, you discover that many of these congregations consist of schools with a sanctuary attached. Many congregations sell themselves, hyphen, justify themselves, hyphen, on the basis of the quality of the educational service that they render. In every congregation, you find people who, once their children have been confirmed, turn to the congregation and say, "Why should we pay the same level of dues? You are no longer educating our children," and that's essentially the purpose for which we affiliated. Congregations which do not discover the means of becoming adult in their focus, of serving the adult needs of the community, and these adult needs are many and varied, such a congregation will not survive if it depends entirely on on its school and its service to young people. There's simply not enough young people to go around, or put another way, the era when a little child shall lead them into the synagogue doors is about over. Period. New paragraph. In 1990, we will be a smaller community, and we will be an older community. In 1990, there will be about two of us over 65 years of age, for every child under 17 years of age. In 1980, 1% of our population is institutionalized, consists of institutionalized elderly, and I am sure that that number will double and triple by the 1990s. And here again, a point should be made. We are going to have to increase the facilities to care for the elderly, which suggests that those facilities which care for the young and for the adult community will have to be maintained rather than rebuilt. This is an era of inflation. This is an era of population implosion. This is an era when the government is beginning to withdraw some of the incentives to charitable giving. And if we squander our monies on building centers or satellite synagogues, we will not have the wherewithal that is required to take care of the very immediate and very real needs of people, the kinds of needs without which people cannot survive. In paragraph 1990, we will be a smaller community, we will be an older community, and we will be a more varied community. We came from many ethnic backgrounds. In Cleveland, the amalgamation of the Eastern European and the Central European took some time. And by and large, in the last decade or two, we've all been all shared similar cultural and class backgrounds. When the census was taken, 93% of the marriages in the age bracket between 50 and 59 involved couples, both of whom were Jewish. In the same census, in the age bracket between 18 and 29, only 60.8% of the marriages involved couples, both of whom were Jewish. Many are coming into our community through conversion. Hyphen, I unfortunately don't have the exact numbers that are involved, hyphen, bringing to us different backgrounds, different attitudes, and different skills. I've always believed in the Book of Ruth. I believe that our community has over the generations benefited by the new blood. But I suggest to you that there's a possible problem implicit in these figures. As you know, in Israel, a movement is underfoot by elements within the politicized religious groups to amend the law of return so that only those who were born of a Jewish mother or have been converted traditionally are believed to be Jews. And some of these pressures inevitably spill over through national agencies into the community. I am frankly concerned that sometime in the next decade or so, a child who has grown up in this congregation or in some other reform conservative congregation, gone through our schools, led our youth group, become active in various organizations in the community, will be appointed to some major office and will suddenly be attacked or blackballed by small elements of the extreme right who will claim that he is not a Jew and only Jews should head our Jewish organizations. While we speak of denominational affiliation, I think it'll come as a surprise to some that the numbers are in fact what they are. 46.9% of the community are affiliated with or declare their interest in Reform Judaism. 39.5% of the community are affiliated with or declare their interest in Conservative Judaism. And 8.9% of the community are affiliated with or declare their interest in the in Orthodoxy. One of the interesting figures in the survey is that nearly 90% of the children in Orthodox homes are involved in the day schools. I'm in favor of intensive Jewish education, but I confess that I worry a bit about the separation of these young people from the rest of the community. I'm afraid that they will be exposed to attitudes which are not conducive to an integral, an open community, one where there is mutual respect on both sides. I don't think these attitudes will come from most of the traditional community. We work together rather openly compared to many communities in the United States. But nationally and internationally, there is a new militancy among the among certain elements of the Orthodox world, comma, those who call themselves a Torah true, comma, and it is not unthinkable that some of these attitudes are become current in a day school situation, which is apart from the rest of the world. That's why it's so important for me to have seen the congregational plenum in these last weeks develop a young people's leadership program, which involves young leaders from all segments of the community meeting together in partnership as religious Jews. I believe that much can be done to mitigate the dangers of separatism, but I believe that Separatism is a real danger, and it will require understanding and sensitivity on all sides in order to confront it and to master it. There are a number of other interesting statistics in this survey. One indicates that family structures, a number indicate that family structures have weakened. 51.3% of mothers of children under 6 years of age are working full time. And nearly 2 out of 3 mothers of children under the age of 6 are working either part-time or full-time. Not only does that indicate the need for babysitting services and foster home care and more daycare centers, but it raises a question as to what problems we are going to see with this group of children as they grow up in a totally different environment than any that has been studied before. We once had the extended family, and now we have the nuclear family, and it's questionable in some cases whether we have very much of a family at all anymore. Nearly 13% of our children of all ages are being raised in homes, in single-parent family homes. Clearly, the congregations and other agencies in the community are going to have to pay great attention not only to provide custodial and caring service for the children, but in giving help and support to the parents as they struggle to find their way in the convulsed society, which is the American Jewish society of today. I was struck by another set of figures, and though the conclusions, the tale cannot be told completely from the chart which was in hand. It was a chart which listed employment by categories and by age groups, age cohorts. And what struck me was what seemed to be a marked change in the younger groups from employment which was entrepreneurial, where they were owning their own establishments, to salaried employment. Now, I'm firmly convinced that the salaries earned by the professional classes of Cleveland, particularly, and by the middle management groups in our community, are probably higher proportionally than they were 10 and 20 years ago. But I don't care what the level of salary is for most people. It is never enough to meet the most of the day-to-day expenditures which they incur. And I do know that in most of our fund drives, 80 to 85% of the drive must be raised from some 10% of the givers, and probably a half of the 50 to 60% of the drive must be raised from a dozen or so of the top givers. We need people who can give $1 million and more to a variety of drives, who can give $250,000, $500,000, or $1 million or more to a variety of drives sometimes in the same year. Now, unless some of these high-salaried people are able to gamble effectively on the stock market, it's unlikely that they're going to build up this kind of capital. And so I suspect that given the decline in the actual numbers of our community, and given this changing employment picture, it's going to be harder and harder to raise the front-end money, which is so critical to the success of any drive. We have then a situation, if I am correct, where because of the economic conditions and the population situation, because of inflation and implosion, this community will not be able to afford all that it has been able to afford before. It will have to struggle to simply maintain the present level of services. It cannot, in my estimation, continue to move its institutions to, if they are institutions to which people come for services, if simply to make them closer to the next population shift. Hardly an institution in our community where the gap between monies which come from Jews or from services rendered, billings, is not diminishing in terms of the total operational budget of the institution or of the synagogue. And so the need is going to be for money for services, and therefore the need is going to be to find new and more imaginative ways to deliver these services. And this brings me to a point which has occupied my concern for a number of years. And that is that I think we have reached a point in the community where we need to find new ways to go about planning for the 1980s and the 1990s, new ways which break out of narrow institutional molds. It's important that we be clear as to the history of our Jewish Community Federation. It's made a valuable and significant contribution to our city, but it was created to meet the needs of another generation. It began at the turn of the century out of the need to finance a number of separate social agencies. And the same group of citizens were providing most of the service, and they were tired of going around every month with another set of pledge cards. Centralized fundraising led to a degree of centralized planning. And then, as professionalism came into the social service field, through the central planning agency for these institutions, a degree of professionalism was introduced into the operation of the individual agencies. In the late 1930s, again, there was a new funding need, a need for overseas monies, for the United Palestine Appeal, for the United Jewish Appeal. And this led to the involvement of the already existing funding agency in those international drives, and then to a concern for the way in which these funds were distributed through the JDC in Palestine and subsequently in Israel. And so we have a community which has concerned itself with, a community federation which has concerned itself with all of the international concerns of the Jewish people, and with those local agents, social aid service agencies, which are affiliated with it. This is not to say that it represented or was concerned with though it obviously was not indifferent to, a whole host of other institutions, primarily the synagogue, which operated in the community. And here a figure from the survey is important to bear in mind. Over 61% of all families in our community are affiliated with congregations. Cleveland has perhaps the highest level of congregational affiliation in the country. One out of three of the respondents in the survey indicated outside of the synagogue they had no other affiliation, had no affiliation with any other Jewish activity or group. The synagogues are where most Jews are. The synagogues do most of the educating of the younger generation. The synagogues do what we are doing today. They are the place where a number of issues can be debated openly and easily. If the synagogues have a smaller community is not necessarily a lesser community. All of us are wise and learned and generous and not only throughout our lives but throughout the Jewish world. Smaller community is not necessarily a lesser community if that smaller community takes itself in hand now and breaks through the institutional concrete, the concern with institutional privileges which has marked us in the past, and finds again the path to openness and to creativity. I carry in mind the model of the small towns in Ohio. Most of them were settled in the mid-19th century. They were settled by Jews of various backgrounds, and soon there appeared an Orthodox shul, a conservative synagogue, and a Reformed temple. And each jealously guarded its prerogative. None of them had enough money to support a rabbi, but it was more important to maintain the differences in the distance than to combine. And then as people faced the day-to-day problems of growing up, the children needing companionship, some of the distance began to break down, but really it didn't break down until economics stepped in, or until enough died so there wasn't a minion. And then suddenly everyone discovered that they could work together, and they began to bind together. Ultimately, there was one synagogue, and they were, for a while, strong enough to hire a rabbi, but the deterioration was too late. Too much had happened. Too many had left. I don't want that to happen to Cleveland. There's no need for it to happen to Cleveland. congregational community has coalesced into a congregational plenum and is engaged in preparing a survey of space and of human resources which are available to the community. Federation community is going through this survey through a similar process of planning and thought. Shouldn't it be possible for everyone to come together and to sit down openly and easily and to work out ways which will benefit all of us? Surely there's no need to be that jealous of prerogatives that we're blind to the larger needs of the whole. I believe it can be done. I know it will be done because economics, social conditions are going to dictate it. But I'd like for these changes to come beforehand rather than after we're caught in a vice, when it may be, in fact, almost too late to accomplish all that we should and can accomplish. I hope that we'll have the vision to achieve such a goal. This is, comma, the historic force, comma, is a creation of the Jewish people who unconsciously created Moses in their own image, period. Ahad Am defines this Moses who lived in Jewish spirit as an idealization of the prophet. By what she meant, a man of truth who sees life with a view unwarped by subjective feelings or thoughts of personal advantage, period. He tells you what he sees just as he sees it, period. He's an idealist who concentrates his whole heart and mind on his ideal and is determined to make the whole world do service to his ideal without any exception. Paul is committed to absolute righteousness, and he works without compromise or thought of self to reform, shape the world according to his vision, period. He makes no distinction between men and men, comma, only between right and wrong, period. When he sees bullies abusing the rights of weak women, comma, Ahad Am is thinking of Zipporah, Z-I-P-P-O-R-A-H, and her sisters at the well, comma, quote, Moses rose to their defense, end of quote, in brackets, EX, period, 3:17, end of bracket. Paragraph. This essay, comma, it's really an essay, hyphen sermon, comma, poses with the reminder that since Moses is an unconscious creation of the Jewish spirit, he is really an echo of the traditional Jewish commitment to an ideal future, period. Quote, Israel has never lived in the present, period. We have been inspired with brilliant hopes for the future, comma, and an ineradicable faith in the coming triumph of the good and the right, period, end of quote, in brackets 3:27-8, end of brackets. Moses leading the tribes towards the promised land becomes a compelling Zionist vision, period. Here is the necessity and urgency of leaving the flesh pots of Egypt, in brackets, Europe, end of brackets, and setting out on the difficult and compelling effort to build an ideal Zion, Z-I-O-N, in Palestine, period. Paragraph. For its time, the sermon was a compelling one. It is full of high hopes and noble ideas, semicolon. But as an analysis of the Moses who lived in the hearts of the Jewish people, we must dismiss it as wishful thinking, period. As this work has shown, there has been no single Moses in the Jewish spirit, but each age has had its own Moses, and at times several images of Moses have coexisted in the same community, period. Ahad Am's basic thesis upon a uniquely modern perception, colon, that each society is always and ever at work, reshaping and even recreating the past for its own purposes, period. Virtue of studying the afterlives of Moses, we gain insight into the many different lives which have been lived by the Jewish people through the centuries. New paragraph. I would argue that the continuities in Jewish life tend to be formal and historical rather than theological and doctrinal, period. This is not a position that will please Orthodox believers, semicolon. But there is not a single religion in history of whom successive generations of adherents have not drawn significantly different pictures of the founder and of the faith of the founder, period. This ought not surprise us, period. Religions are not abstract sets of ideas which float somewhere out there above mankind's heads, but ideas taken into the individual soul and into the community's culture, and therefore subject to all the vicissitudes and changes which affect any living organism, period. Religious traditions are living entities, period. All that grows is in a constant process of transformation, period. Adult is not simply an elongated child, period. He has lost the child's innocent amazement at the world, comma, the child's mythic approach to life, semicolon, and has replaced it with a more commonsensical approach based on hard experience, period. New drives have come into play, period. To be sure, comma, as Freud has taught all of us, comma, the past has not been abandoned, comma. It lives, comma, subterraneously but powerfully, period. Man is not the child, period. Religions are not abstract set of doctrines which exist independent of community, but the cluster of memories and myths, rites and customs, of institutions and ideas by which a community pulls together its life and the life of the individuals that comprise the group and shape these into a meaningful and ordered whole, period. To a large degree, the needs of men depend upon their time and their circumstance, period. Living in almost unchanging social environment, the Israelites needed to feel in harmony with the will of their God, and they understood redemption largely as that which affected the whole group, period. Living in changeful times where the sense of the group has been weakened, modern man needs a redemptive vision which speaks to the individual, which puts him in tune with himself. New paragraph. Religious symbols seem to have a life of their own, period. Once a society has consecrated a holiday or an object or an idea or a founder and surrounded that symbol with an aura of deep spiritual significance, comma, the holy, comma, often holds on to this ceremony or idea long after the original meaning of the symbol is no longer significant to him, period. Aura, M-E-N-O-R-E-H, comma, the symbol, the Jewish symbol, which reaches back furthest into the past, comma, originally signified the tree of life and was held to represent the architectonic of the universe. Today it is simply a symbol of the light of learning and the light of faith, period. Religious tradition are always busy pouring new wine into old bottles, period. Paragraph. Conservative theologians accept this thesis to a point, period. They accept the idea that have been changes in the unessential, period. They know that that European painting galleries in the museum, in our museums, are filled with pictures of biblical scenes in which the protagonists are dressed in a costume of 15th century France or 13th century Italy, period. Know that in each age the tradition has picked up customs and practices from the surrounding environment which were not essential, like, comma, so they claim, comma, to its original purpose, period. They argue that this kind of anachronistic costuming is essentially innocent, that it is the inevitable task of the religious reformer to purge the tradition from the barnacles which accrete to it over time, period. For any religious tradition, the sense of continuity is central and critical, period. The power of a religious message is the sense that conform and express the fundamental nature of reality, period. Our everyday experiences are confusing, and religions provide a sense of life, of our lives being based firmly on solid rock, period. Those who attack the religious structures of the day invariably do so in terms of a call to return to some original teaching, presumably set out the essential conditions in terms of which life must of necessity be lived, period. Religion essentially promises timeless truths. And the problem is that the modern spirit suspects all timeless truths, period. This is the era of the fourth dimension, period. We have been forced to bring time into all of our thinking, period. Because of the special conditions of Jewish life in Europe, comma, the ghetto and the pale of the settlement, comma, Jews entered the modern world much later than their Western European neighbors, period. The first response to modernity among Jews was the Haskalah, H-A-S-K-A-L-E-H. And the essential discipline of the Haskalah was the discipline of history, period. And the challenge of history and as the Haskalah developed it was that it subverted the traditionalist claim that the Judaism with which people were familiar had been consistent and a single entity over time, period. The dramatic of these images in our study has been that of the Torah. Obviously, it goes to the very heart of any definition of Judaism, whether the group understands the image of Moses receiving the Torah as an image in which he receives the Ten Commandments, semicolon, 613 rules, which are the sum of the Torah laws, semicolon, the whole of the five books of Moses, semicolon, the written and the oral Torah, semicolon, the written Torah, the oral Torah, and a secret Kabbalah, K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H, period. Historically, the argument can be made that almost from the beginning, Jews have held on to the image of Moses receiving the Torah on Mount Sinai. It cannot be imagined that each generation consecrated on the basis of this image the same Torah, period. Modernity began when people recognized the importance of the dimension of time in all philosophic and religious study, period. Philosophers often use the image of a tree as a metaphor to describe the development of Jewish life, period. The seedling had been planted at Sinai, semicolon. Over the centuries, the trunk had thickened as each generation had added its understanding of Torah, period. Over time, the tree's main branches had lengthened and thickened as commentary added detail to the basic themes of God's unity, free will, providence, reward and punishment, and the messianic promise, period. Each spring, the tree came to leaf, and each fall shed its leaves as communities developed customs appropriate to their circumstances, and then, comma, under new circumstances, comma, changed or abandoned them, period. Abandoning these customs did not change the basic teachings, period. New paragraph. As long as it survives, the tree retains its original shape, comma, so this metaphor is attractive to those who draw encouragement from the idea that their religious tradition has never needed to change its basic doctrine, period. I question this metaphor's usefulness as a definition of what actually occurred, period. Imagine Moses resurrected among us on a visit to the most traditional synagogue in our city, period. Ask yourself what his reaction would be to what he would see and hear of the religion that he helped to found, period. Synagogues developed 1,000 years after his death, period. The first rabbi was ordained more than 1,500 years after he anointed Aaron as high priest, period. If he took Moses to the ark and opened the scroll which bears his name, comma, he could not read it, period. The Torah script, comma, though antique, comma, uses an alphabet developed several centuries after Moses' death, period. Nobody recognized the scroll itself, since the Torah did not achieve its present form until some generations after the Judeans began to return to Jerusalem from the Babylonian exile, hyphen, more than 700 years after Moses' lifetime. The myth of the Ten Commandments chiseled onto stone tablets is the ultimate religious symbol of religion's major function to affirm as rock solid its a certain perception of reality and for a confident set of teachings as to ethics and morality, period. So my religion isn't providing the support it should when it's always saying, single quote, perhaps, end of single quote, or single quote, we'll have to see, end of single quote, or single quote, make up your own mind, end of single quote, period. Unconsciously, but revealingly, comma, the Jews have written their Torah scrolls in the same scriptural script form over the long centuries to suggest continuity over time and the eternal value of the scroll itself. Paragraph. Jews and most other religionists, comma, tend to underestimate dramatically the extent of changes which have taken place. Period. And commentary, comma, that ultimately flexible art can, comma, enabled what Jews knew to be Torah to become Torah, or at least sense that they were tampering with Torah, period. New paragraph. In my thinking, I have replaced the tree model with the river model. I look on the Torah tradition as a river. Indeed, I look on all major religious traditions as a mighty river, comma, say the Mississippi, period. Mississippi begins as a small stream feeding a clear water Minnesota lake and flows several thousand miles to the Gulf of Mexico, period. The Torah begins in an event, comma, the revelation at Sinai, comma, whose substance we cannot fully recover, comma, and flows down 3,000 years to today, period. I doubt that many molecules of the water which emerge at the river's source actually reach the Gulf, period. Some are lifted off by evaporation, period. Farmers pipe water for irrigation, and cities draw water to support their population, period. Other waters mix in the stream, colon. Rivers fall and tributaries mingle with the original stream, period. Much of what existed in Moses' day is no longer, comma, but the mighty stream flows on, period. New paragraph. The Mississippi is a single river, comma, but as it flows, it changes its aspect, period. Sometimes it runs calmly for miles, comma. Other time, it races through white water rapids, period. In Jewish life, there have been quiet and uneventful centuries and times of dramatic change, period. I can locate the Mississippi on the map, and I can bathe in its waters, but I cannot deny its changeful nature, period. The Mississippi flows in a single direction, comma, drawn on by the fall of the land and the spin of the earth, comma, by God's hand, period. The Jewish experience flows into history, comma, drawn on by changing times, comma, by the changing needs of Jewish life, comma, by the changing personality of the Jew, semicolon, or as a theologian might put it, comma, by God's creative purpose, period. New paragraph. The great divide among religious thinkers today is between those who insist that the revelation, comma, that is the whole Torah, comma, stands outside of time and provides the standard against which all Jewish judgments must be made, and those who see Sinai as a flash of understanding, comma, a revelation, comma, which set new intellectual and spiritual forces into being. Forces which have not yet played out their strength and still continue to affect Jewish life today, period. In 1492, Isaac Abarbanel, A-B-A-R-B-A-N-E-L, in brackets 1437-1508, hyphen, was exiled from Spain, period. In 1498, this one-time grandee of the Jewish community was exiled again from Portugal, period. He's one of the few who accepted exile rather than conversion when the rulers, when Ferdinand and Isabella issued their draconian order requiring the entire community to either convert or be exiled without their possessions, period. Abarbanel is best known and for some rather interesting political theory which can be found within those works. He also wrote a commentary on one of the tractates of the Mishnah, comma, the sayings of the fathers, comma, particularly on the opening sentence which we have often quoted, colon, Moses received the Torah from Sinai and gave it to Joshua to the elders, three dots, period. Abarbanel wonders why this particular language, period. In point of fact, Moses did not receive the Torah from Sinai, comma, he received the Torah from God, period. This is not simply a geographic point. If it had been, the sentence would read that Moses received the Torah at Sinai, period. Why then, quote, from Sinai, end of quote, question mark, period. answer that, quote, from Sinai, end of quote, is a causative phrase, comma, which suggests Moses' lonely journey to Sinai, his long stay there, during which he received the highest degree of enlightenment available in order to receive the godly Torah, period. In all history, people learn what they learn from teachers, comma, but Moses was not taught by man. Moses was taught by God. It was God who filled him with the higher wisdom, and this to a phenomenal degree. And all this was obtained from Sinai, which means that it was obtained as a result of his lonely sojourn there without food or drink through the days of spiritual meditation and communion with God, period. Abarbanel captures in this in these few paragraphs the traditional sense of the uniqueness of the Sinai experience and the miraculous nature of the Torah. New paragraph. The basic argument of the traditionalist is that the Torah is unique, period. As Abarbanel suggests, comma, it did not come into being in the normal way of all other literatures, period. It was not written by a man whose values were conditioned by his education and the culture of his times, period. Being so, the Torah cannot be subjected to the same forms of analysis by which scholars cut away and reveal various parts and the composition of the other classic texts of antiquity, period. Orthodoxy has adjusted to modernity by accepting the importance of history, but by arguing that the revelation, comma, the Torah, comma, is outside of time, period. The basic argument goes to the uniqueness of Torah, comma, the inapplicability of analytical tools to Torah, and the argument that biblical critics are at odds with themselves, and therefore their ideas are nothing more than theories, and not very persuasive theories at that. Biblical criticism leaves little to a value behind. It cuts away, and like the archaeological disciplines in the field, it must destroy in order to uncover. The traditional commentary is rich and suggestive. Biblical criticism leaves one with little besides the feeling of a slowly changing and evolving primitive tradition, which is hardly the basis for a living faith, period. The traditional approach provides dignity and authority in a world of confusion and the necessary starting points in the relativistic world, period. Paragraph. The argument, when it is made almost entirely in non-historic terms. Sees this in the shift of language, where rabbinic Judaism tended to talk of Torah, L-E, Moshe, M-O-S-H-E, M-I apostrophe, S-I-N-A. Modern traditionalists tend to use the phrase Torah, M-I-N, H-A hyphen, S-H-A, M-A-Y-I-M. Instead of the Torah given to Moses, it is the Torah which comes from heaven. Emphasis on the miraculous power of the Torah. An emphasis which stands on its own and avoids the hard and unhelpful speculative issues involved in Mosaic authorship, period. There is a desire to pull away from the man and to emphasize the message and the mystery and the miracle of the teaching, period. Moses is the message stands on its own merit, and in this way they avoid caught up in the details of an argument over a historical fact. It's an argument for the validity of an entire religious stance, rather than a literalist argument that each and every literal meaning of a Torah narrative is in fact so. No Orthodox religious leader has written a biography of Moses, period. That's not where the emphasis lies. the what must be held firm is the Torah as revelation. The question of Moses' biography is in many ways too concrete a difficult question for the traditionalist to care to deal with it. Period. New paragraph. Abraham Isaac HaKohen, H-A-C-O-H-E-N, Cook, K-O-O-K, in brackets 1865-1935, end of brackets, was the chief rabbi of the Jews of Palestine during the 1920s and early 30s. And is one of the most appealing and of the Orthodox religious figures of the century. In 1914, just before the First World War, while he was a